Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, January 27th, 2024. False report on school shooting lands one arrest. Odessa. The Ector County Independent School District police arrested a 16-year-old Permian High School student for making a false report to shoot up the school on Thursday. According to the press release from the school district, an acquaintance of the student, who resides out of state, sent the threatening message to her this morning, and the female student then reported it as having been sent to her on campus. Quote, her reports started a police response that lasted for most of the day, using valuable resources and causing a lot of anxiety for the school and our community, end quote, the school district's press release read. The student is charged with a Class B misdemeanor of filing a false report and will also face disciplinary action from the school district as well. The Ector County School District has faced a number of threats within the past year. In October 2023, ECISD school were placed in secure status after the FBI received threats. During late August 2023, 911 emergency operators received an anonymous phone call consisting of a bomb threat at Permian High School. Additionally, in May 2023, Ector County ISD reported taking extra precautions at Odessa High School after district officials say the school received a school shooting threat. New video game store coming. A new video gaming store is coming soon to South Midland. According to Maybe in Midland, Odessa, Retro Funk will populate 2610 West Front Street, Suite A. It will feature retro gaming consoles, collectibles, and buy-slash-sell-slash-trade opportunities. The new store will also be hosting events like tournament nights, Maybe in Midland, Odessa posted. In the area, Retro Hall in Odessa and Entertain Mart on West Cuthbert Avenue are two other retro video gaming stores. Midlanders Preventing Nuclear Waste honored. The Exchange Club of Midland presented its 69th annual Golden Deeds Award banquet at their end-of-the-year celebration at the Petroleum Club of Midland. This year's award recipients were Tommy Taylor, Monica Perales, and Stani Pollock, all with Fasken Oil and Ranch. The banquet kicked off with Exchange Club President Fred Newman leading the Pledge of Allegiance and Reverend Joseph Ogbonna of Our Lady of Lourdes Parish in Andrews giving the invocation. Members and their guests chose their main course of either beef tenderloin, quail, or sea bass, each of which were served with sweet potatoes and a vegetable medley. Dessert was double chocolate cake topped with raspberry. Exchange Club member Earl Sebring then gave a tribute to the three honorees, recognizing their more than five-year effort to prevent high-level nuclear waste from being transported to site about 65 miles from downtown Midland. The trio then each individually and humbly accepted their award. One dead, 15-year-old injured in traffic collision. A two-vehicle incident in Gaines County resulted in the death of a 45-year-old woman and put a 15-year-old male in serious condition. The collision occurred at 7:20 p.m. Wednesday along U.S. 62 and County Road 341. The two vehicles involved included a 2012 Toyota Tacoma and a 2013 Chevrolet Silverado. Mariana Ves Leon Vasquez, 45, was pronounced deceased at the scene by the Seminole EMS unit. She was a passenger in the Chevrolet Silverado, as was the 15-year-old male. The name of the 15-year-old was not released due to him being a minor, but he was transported to UMC Lubbock and listed in serious condition. The two drivers from the accident, a 59-year-old man of Hobbs, New Mexico, and a 47-year-old man of Seminole, were transported to Covenant Health Hobbs Hospital and listed as being in stable condition. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety report, the Tacoma and the Silverado were traveling eastbound on U.S. 62 when the Tacoma struck the Silverado from the rear. The collision caused the Silverado to veer off the roadway into the South Barrow Ditch, where it then rolled over. This crash remains under investigation and no additional information is available at this time. OPD seek information on vandalism suspect. The Odessa Police Department is searching for a suspected vandal who damaged glass doors at Odessa City Hall early Thursday morning. According to an Odessa Police Department Facebook post, an OPD investigation revealed that around 12:18 a.m. Thursday, the vandal used an ashtray receptacle to damage glass doors located on the north side of the building. The post states that no arrests have been made and there is minimal suspect information. OPD described the suspect as a male wearing a dark-colored hoodie, jeans, black shoes, and a black backpack. Anyone with information is encouraged to contact OPD at 432-335-3333 or Odessa Crime Stoppers and reference case number 24-0001-009. Odessa Police posted that new security measures have been taken recently to better protect City Hall employees, including a new security badge system. Life Tributes. Lily Jamin, 10/25/1927 to 1/20/2024. Lily Jamin Yong A. Moy passed away at the age of 96 years on January 20, 2024 in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. She was born on October 25, 1927, in Jakarta, Indonesia, former Dutch East Indies, to her Chinese-born parents, King Tong Yong and Yi A Tui. At the age of 1 month old, she was adopted by her Dutch-Indonesian parents, Carol and Estina Smith. She was preceded in death by her beloved parents and sons-in-law, Johnny Lee Qualls and Adolfo Dorado. She is survived by her beloved children, grandkids, and great-grandkids, Eno Ter Haar of Amsterdam, Netherlands, Gladys and Andrew Qualls of Midland, Texas, Tim, Katie, Griffin, Jude, and Macy Qualls of Spring, Texas, Stella and Jan Koster of Landsmeer, Netherlands, Patrick, Nikki, and Nana Ter Haar of Amsterdam, Netherlands, Kevin Koster of Landsmeer, Netherlands, Laura Ter Haar, Fido Dorado Ter Haar, Roberto, Christina, and Killian Dorado Ter Haar, Jose Dorado Ter Haar of Mallorca, Spain. Her life will be celebrated with a mass on Friday, January 26, 2024, at 1330 hours at St. Augustinus Catholic Church in Amsterdam Noord, Netherlands. She will make her final journey to her final resting place and will be interned at St. Stephen Catholic Church in Midland, Texas at a later time. Salamat Yalan, beloved Mamie, Oma Lily. Doris Jean Turner, 8/13/1927 to 1/22/2024. Doris Jean Turner of Midland passed away peacefully on January 22, 2024, and has now taken up residence in her heavenly home. Doris was born near Sweetwater, Texas on August 13, 1927. She was oldest of six daughters born to Clinton and Bernice Reed. Doris was preceded in death by her parents, husband Mac, son Brian, husband Bill, sisters Verna and Linda, step-granddaughter Sherry, and many close friends. She is survived by daughter Betty Barnes of Midland, son Kelly Barnes and wife Susan of Montgomery, Texas, son Roger Barnes and wife Connie of Midland, as well as three grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. She is also survived by stepson Alan Turner and wife Fran of McCall, Idaho, and stepdaughter Marlene Holmes and husband Bruce of Yuma, Arizona, as well as three step-granddaughters and nine step-great-grandchildren. A memorial service will be held on Thursday, February 1st at 11 o'clock at Grace Lutheran Church in Midland. A private interment will take place in Abilene, Texas at a later date. In lieu of flowers, please feel free to make a donation in Doris's memory to Grace Lutheran Church or to a charity that is dear to your heart. Cremation arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ruth Irene Mendenhall, 9/12/1929 to 1/24/2024. Ruth Irene Mendenhall was born to Otto and Ada Bergstraser on September 12, 1929 in Lincoln, Nebraska. They preceded her in death, as did her brother Walter Bergstraser of Syracuse, New York. Ruth dearly loved her family, daughter Susan Benham of Midland, Texas, son John Mendenhall and wife Wheeling of Austin, Texas, granddaughter Erin Pomeranz of Eden Prairie, Minnesota, Sarah Benham of Burlington, Vermont, Grace Mendenhall of Austin, Texas, and grandson Miles Mendenhall of Austin, Texas. She also adored her two great-grandsons, Benjamin and Nathan Pomeranz of Eden Prairie, Minnesota. The family will gather for graveside committal services at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Any memorials can lovingly be sent to All Saints Anglican Church, 1000 Upland Street, Midland, Texas, 79703. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Lynn Brewer, 2/25/1946 to 1/23/2024. Midland. Lynn Medlin Brewer, age 77, went home to be with her Savior Jesus Christ on the evening of January 23, 2024, surrounded and comforted by her loved ones in Midland, Texas. She was born Merle Lynn Yendell in Lubbock, Texas, on February 25, 1946, to Merle Maud Polly Yendell, Nay Jenkins, and Daniel Howard Yendell, both of Tahoka, Texas. She is survived by her brother, James Howard Medlin of Shallow Water, Texas, and sisters Joanne Miles and Dana Beasley, both of Odessa, Texas. She'll be welcomed into heaven by her Savior, Jesus Christ, alongside her husband, Scott Brewer, her dad, Francis Isaac Ike Medlin, her mother, Polly Medlin, her son-in-law, John Boswell, her biological father, Dan Yandell, and her dear friends, Patsy and Bill Brindle. Lynn was affectionately known as Mimi to her four grandchildren: Patrick B. Ray, wife Sophie, of Houston, Aiden Radford, Scott Boswell of Midland, Abram Scott Brewer of Crane, and Nora Raylan Boswell of Midland. She was blessed to enjoy nearly 37 years of being a grandmother, which gave her immense joy, as well as 40 years of being a loving aunt to Matthew Medlin, son of James and Melissa Medlin of Shallow Water. Her cousins were like siblings to her: Hoppy, Ada Beth, Jerry, Cliff, Harvey, Troy, Tommy, Tim, Ted, Marshall, Virginia, Carolyn, Donnie Marie, Jeanette, Kenny, Jimmy, Don, Kendall, Sabrina, Robin, Misty, Karen, Sue, Sandy, and Mary, all of the Jenkins family, as well as Jody, Mike, Linda, Brenda, and Carmen, all of the Yandell family. In lieu of flowers, gifts can be made to the Bynum Special Needs School of Midland, where Lynn's granddaughter, Nora, is currently a student. Visitation will be at the 3222 Whittle Way Drive, Midland, Texas, 79707, at 5 p.m. on Saturday, January 27, 2024. Services will be at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home in Odessa, Texas, 11 o'clock a.m., Sunday, January 28, 2024. Vicki Bryant, 1/13/1951 to 1/22/2024. Vicki Bryant, 73 years old, of Dover, Arkansas, passed away on Monday, January 22, 2024. The family will receive guests from 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m., Sunday, January 28, 2024, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held at 11 o'clock a.m., Monday, January 29, 2024, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Vicki was born on January 13, 1951, in Abilene, Texas, to Raymond and Lori Joyner. Vicki is survived by Lorena and Perry Whitby, daughter and son-in-law, Tanya Wilder, daughter, Eric and Angela Whitby, grandson and granddaughter-in-law, Alexandria and Casey Small, granddaughter and grandson-in-law, Christopher Brown, grandson, Kayla Novak, granddaughter, and of course her six great-grandsons, Aiden Whitby, Blake Whitby, Caleb Whitby, Wyatt Novak, Christian Brown, and Nicholas Fuentes Brown, along with brother Claudessa Ray, Pete Joyner. Vicki is preceded in death by her parents Raymond and Lori Joyner, her grandparents Nathan and Annie Mae Joyner, and Lester and Maddie Fulfer. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Barbara Jeanette Lincoln. Barbara Jeanette Lincoln, 83, of Midland, passed away January 24, 2024. The family will receive guests from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. Monday, January 29, 2024, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. Tuesday, January 30th, 2024, at Elevate Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Deborah Davenport, 219-1951 to 122-2024. Deborah Debbie Davenport, age 72, born in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, passed away on Monday, January 22, 2024. She is preceded by her father, Joe Wilson, mother, LaRue Bowers, brother, Daryl Wilson, and husband, Joe Lee Davenport. She is survived by her children, Britt Davenport, and spouse, Becky Davenport, Katie Aminette and spouse, Kevin Aminette, and grandchildren, Cameron Davenport, Lexi Davenport, Kaylee Aminette, and Daniel Aminette, and life partner, Steve Servatius. Services are not planned. In lieu of flowers, a charitable donation to an animal rescue or the Wounded Warrior Project in her name would be appreciated. Michael Lee Hyde. Michael Lee Hyde of Midland passed away on January 14, 2024. A service will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, January 27, 2024 at Midland First Assembly, 100 West Wadley Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79705. Donald Wayne Dawkins. Donald Wayne Dawkins, age 77, of Midland, passed away on Monday, January 22, 2024. Graveside services will be held Saturday, January 27, 2024, at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Thomas Hardaway. Thomas Hardaway, 84, of Eunice, New Mexico, passed away January 20th, 2024. A service will be scheduled at a later date with Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, January 27th. Cher to host annual fundraiser. Cher Walk will host 15th year in April. The story was written by Nathaniel Miller. Dust off those walking shoes and get ready to put them to good use. Sharing Hands, a Respite Experience, or SHARE, has scheduled its 15th annual SHARE Walk. The event will begin at 9 a.m. April 20th at Astound Broadband Stadium, 801 North Loop 250 in Midland. As the largest of two fundraisers hosted by the organization, the Shooters That Share Clay Shoot is the other and scheduled for July 19th. Both help raise money for the nonprofit, whose focus is helping families with a special needs child. Bouncers and other children's activities will be also on site, including lunch provided by Market Street. All proceeds will remain local. Quote, "This is a sensory-friendly, relaxed, and laid-back event," Marketing and Development Director Kelly Trowbridge said. Quote, "If you have a child that happens to need a walking aid or have a wheelchair or something of that nature, that's fine. We just hope to see people participate." End quote. Founded as a nonprofit in 2009, SHARE currently works with 175 families in Odessa, Midland, and the surrounding areas to provide services such as respite care, support groups, support for siblings, and mom and dad nights out. The nonprofit offers much-needed assistance for those raising special needs children, including those with Down syndrome, autism, and those with other medical issues. In 2023, more than 3,000 people attended the Share Walk. Participants can join as single entries, groups, families, and companies that also sponsored employees and the event. Tables with resource information will also be available. As a parent of an autistic son, Trowbridge said Share and the community is tight-knit and everyone is supportive. When a position became available, she jumped at the chance to apply. Quote, "This organization has impacted our lives so much that I wanted to help," Trowbridge said. "I wanted to find a way to help, and it's been super rewarding." End quote. Making strides. Permian High School thespians heading for national contest. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. For the second time since 1999, Permian High School theater students will be competing in the International Thespian Festival at Indiana University in Bloomington in late June 2024. 8 students in head theater director Michaela Grenier's class achieved this goal. Quote, "I'm very proud of our competitors, including those who didn't qualify to move on at this time. These students had to prepare their competition pieces on top of their busy schedules for school, home, other productions PHS Theater did this semester, and any other activities they're involved in," Grenier said. "This is just the second year since 1999 that our students attended and competed at the Texas Thespians Festival. Last year, we just had 5 students compete and 2 national qualifiers. This year, we had 13 entries and 8 qualifiers," Grenier said. "The next step is to work on fundraising to make sure the students have a chance to compete at nationals," she added. The group includes juniors Brooklyn King and Madeline Linville, seniors Hope Joyce, Jay Dean, and Megan Lowry, and sophomores Wade Harvey, Colton Lewis, and Jonah Davison. In addition to Grenier, Raimundo Montoya is the technical theater director, and the students said they played an important role in their success. The state competition was in Grapevine in November 2023. Lowry said she heard a rumor that the list of people going to nationals were going to be sent out on a particular night, so she stayed up all night waiting for it. Quote, "I had used my friend's phone because mine wouldn't open the link. I ended up being number 958 on the list. I had to make her screenshot it and sent it to me so I could send it to my family. My friends had to cover my mouth because I started screaming," Lowry said. Dean said he also found out he'd made it to nationals late at night, and he was surprised. Quote, "I'm pretty new to theater. I've only been doing it for like 2 years, and whenever I was competing, there was some real serious talent, and that I wasn't doubting that, but the caliber of actors there was immense, so I was kind of iffy on the idea of even getting to nationals, so whenever I actually did find out, it was a sense of achievement that I've never really had before," he added. Davison said he also was caught unawares when he was notified. Quote, "I was on my phone just playing a game, and then my friend Caleb leans over and he's like, "Oh, hey, you made it," Davison said. He didn't know what his friend was talking about, so Davison looked up the list and saw he'd made it to Nationals. Linville didn't think she had made it because the original list didn't include her. But then she got a call from Grenier, who told Linville there was an error in the tabulations and she had made it. Quote, "It was very confusing because I had just gone through all the emotions of not making it, but I was very proud of myself because I had to choreograph my whole piece by myself, which was kind of hard. It was just a sense of pride, I guess," Linville added. Joyce said preparation for Nationals means finding whatever you did to get to this point, whether it was a song, monologue, or stage managing, and really perfecting it so they put their best foot forward at Nationals. Harvey, Lewis, and Davison performed a comedy at State. Lewis said he feels like finding something within themselves to bring out the inner character helped them make it to Nationals. Quote, "I also feel like it could have had something to do with the genre, because whenever we were there, every single play was really sad, and ours was the only funny one, so everybody liked it. I feel like that might have had some part in it," Lewis added. Harvey said he's pretty sure what the judges were looking for was the potential they had as actors, not how much you aced it, but how much you could potentially ace it. End quote. There's a lot of individual work that will go into preparing for Nationals, but they will have after-school tutorials, voice lessons, and time set aside to work with the directors. Quote, "It's really a lot of by-yourself work," Joyce said. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Register to vote. The last day to register to vote in the March primary is Monday, February 5th. The first day of early voting is Tuesday, February 20th, and the last day to apply to vote by mail is February 23rd. The final day of early voting is March 1st, and Election Day is March 6th in Texas. Questions? Visit tinyurl.com/24xacbvs. Symphony Young Professionals. West Texas Symphony Young Professionals will have a 7:30 p.m. February 2nd event where attendees can sit in on a symphony rehearsal and enjoy a backstage mixer at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. On February 3rd, they can attend the West Texas Symphony Concert WTS Spotlight at 7:30 p.m., also at the Wagner Noel. Both events are free and for people 21 and over. RSVP is required by January 31st. Send email to syp@wtxs.org. Candidates and Catfish. Republican candidates for Ector County Precinct Chairs and Donna Kelm, candidate for Ector County GOP Chair, are inviting residents and their families to Candidates, Conservatives, Conversation, and Catfish from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday at Big Daddy's Catfish, 1121 East 42nd Street. Visit tinyurl.com/y7zjcxfz. Board Teachers. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, will present the Board Teachers Comedy Tour on January 28th. The doors will open at 6 p.m., and the event will start at 7 p.m. Tickets start at $35. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/33FAC. 8MH5A. Shrimp Fest. The Ellen Noel Art Museum will present Shrimp Fest 2024 at 7 p.m. February 26th at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. General admission tickets are $50. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/BDMTKACA. Bookworms Literacy Festival. The Education Foundation of Odessa will present a Bookworms Literacy Festival from 10 a.m. to noon, April 27th at Lawndale Park, 9201 Rainbow Drive. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/4T9N2HPS. Conducting course gives students new perspective. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Conducting is more than just waving your hands or brandishing a baton. It's a required class in music education at University of Texas Permian Basin. Quote, "It's using your ears, and it's also a lot of teaching. My job as director of bands is to put performances together that have a high level of artistic merit. If I just wave my hands, that's never going to happen. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes along with that," director of bands Brian Brow said. All students are required to take conducting because at some point in their careers, whether the students are moving on to master's or doctoral degrees in performance, they're going to end up having to conduct somewhere along the way. Quote, "It's really good for our students to have at least a basic approach to conducting," Brow said. There are two classes that the students take for their undergraduate degrees. One is basic conducting, which is split into instrumental or choral, and for the second level, he teaches the instrumental and the choral director teaches the choral side. Quote, "The second level is a little bit more advanced, focused on either the wind or orchestra level, which is what I do, or the vocal level, because it's two different art forms," Brow said. The motions are basically the same. Quote, "One is always in the same spot, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, can change depending on what the note groupings are there or what time signatures are there. But that basic is pretty standard. The size of the pattern that they change for dynamics, smaller is going to be softer, bigger is going to be louder. Those kinds of core fundamentals are the same across all conducting," Brow said. The instrumental conductors typically use a baton, and choral directors don't. The baton is really just an extension of your hand, and because those ensembles tend to be a little bit larger and more wrapped around the conductor, it's really important for them to have that to provide clarity to the ensemble. There are a lot more rhythmic elements to wind band music. Vocal music basically has four parts. They do a lot more expression with their left hand or how they move the sound. Instrumental conductors do that too, but it's just a different style of conducting, Brow said. He added that he will sometimes not use a baton if he is doing a transcription of a vocal work. He mentioned two lyrical pieces that were originally written for voice and transcribed for band that he doesn't use a baton for. Quote, "I feel like it gets more of what the composer originally wanted. It does make a difference whether you use a baton or not, which is why most vocalists don't use it, because they're trying to get a little bit more nuance out of the four different voices that they're conducting, whereas typically a wind band will have anywhere between 10 and 12 voices across the instrumentation, Brow said. When he says voices, he is referring to the instruments. Brow said learning conducting has helped him over the years, and his teachers have been influential in his career. He remembers that in high school, he didn't enjoy studying chemistry or math, but he always loved history. Quote, "In fact, I think if I wasn't doing this, I'd probably be a history teacher. I really liked doing that research aspect of things. That was a lot of my doctoral degree, going back and figuring out how do we get to where we are today, because originally they didn't have conductors. They would just kind of go," Brow said. Quote, James Rees, who was one of the band conductors for this past weekend, he actually had the band play without a conductor for the first piece when they opened. It can be done without, but the conductor's job is really to lead the ensemble, provide the vision and the interpretation of the piece, whether that's choral, orchestra, or band. There's a lot of in-depth study time that you have to put into trying to figure out what it is, he added. Brow said it helps if you can read about the music or the conductors to know how to approach a piece of music. With contemporary composers, you can call them and ask what they were thinking when they wrote a certain piece, but you can't do that with Beethoven or Shostakovich. Quote, "It's a lot of what those great minds leave behind in their writing that we have to discover," Brow said. He added that he performed two concerts a semester. The first one this year is the end of March, and then there is a large community concert called Prism. Students Christian Zuniga and Kimberly Lopez both plan to go into music education and have taken Brow's conducting course. Zuniga comes from a 5A school in Corsicana, which is about 5.5 hours from Odessa. He started playing tuba at age 11. Quote, "I think his class is a great necessity to have going into teaching," Zuniga said in an email. Being able to conduct music rather than play it gives you a whole new perspective that he has enjoyed. Quote, "Music has been a huge part of my life ever since I was 11, and I'm 23 now. If I didn't have it, then I have no idea where I would be. I have had amazing teachers in the past, from middle school to now, with Dr. Brow and Dr. Lindsay Iben, who have all had some kind of impact on my musical journey. I want to have that same kind of impact on my future students and have them enjoy music the same way that I did and be the best teacher that I can be for them." Lopez plans to go into music education as an elementary teacher. Quote, "I really enjoyed Dr. Brow's conducting because it challenged me to see what conducting is all about. I used to think that conducting was going to be easy, but the class showed me that there is so much artistry to conducting that it is your style and only your style. The class challenged me to become a little loose and not become a textbook conductor, or so structured that I had to follow by the rules. I believe the conducting class will help me move forward by taking initiative of my learning and appreciate the art style of not only conducting, but a person with life behind their conducting," she added.
Fawcett to host Town Hall. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett announced Friday that he and Commissioner Billy Hall will be hosting a Town Hall event in South Ector County. "Our goal is to provide a forum for open dialogue between the commissioners, court officials that represent them, and also to provide information regarding the topic of emergency services in that area," Fawcett said in a news release. "The event will be open to the public, and all citizens of Ector County are invited to join. The event will take place on Friday, February the 2nd, at Little Ranch Park Place, 15837 U.S. 385 in Odessa. The discussions will begin at 6:30 p.m. For more information, you may call the office of Ector County Judge at 432-498-4100. This day in history, today is Saturday, January the 27th, and on this date, astronauts Virgil Gus Grissom, Edward H. White, and Roger B. Caffey died in a flash fire during a test aboard their Apollo spacecraft. And on this date in 1756, composer Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart was born in Salzburg, Austria. In 1880, Thomas Edison received a patent for his electric incandescent lamp. In 1888, the National Geographic Society was incorporated in Washington, D.C. In 1944, during World War II, the Soviet Union announced the complete end of the deadly German siege of Leningrad, which had lasted for more than 2 years. In 1945, during World War II, Soviet troops liberated the Nazi concentration camps Auschwitz and Birkenau in Poland. In 1973, the Vietnam Peace Accords were signed in Paris. In 1981, President Ronald Reagan and his wife, Nancy, greeted at the White House the 52 former American hostages released by Iran. In 1984, singer Michael Jackson suffered serious burns to his scalp when pyrotechnics set his hair on fire during the filming of a Pepsi-Cola TV commercial at the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles. In 2010, Apple CEO Steve Jobs unveiled the iPad tablet during a presentation in San Francisco, and J.D. Salinger, the reclusive author of The Catcher in the Rye, died in Cornish, New Hampshire at age 91. In 2013, flames raced through a crowded nightclub in southern Brazil, killing 242 people. In 2017, President Donald Trump barred all refugees from entering the United States for 4 months, declaring the ban necessary to prevent radical Islamic terrorists from entering the nation. In 2018, comic strip artist Mort Walker, a World War II veteran who satirized the Army with antics of the lazy private Beetle Bailey, died in Connecticut at age 94. In 2020, China confirmed more than 2,700 cases of the new coronavirus, with more than 80 deaths in that country. U.S. health officials said they believed the risk to Americans remained low and that they had no evidence that the new virus was spreading in the United States. Obituaries. Lynn Medlin Brewer, age 77, passed away on January the 23rd. Funeral service was held on Sunday, January the 28th. Deborah Darlene Devenport, age 72, born in Oklahoma City, passed away on Monday, January the 22nd. Services are not planned. In lieu of flowers, a charitable donation to an animal rescue or the Wounded Warrior Project in her name would be appreciated. David Lee Jackson, Jr., age 81, passed away on Saturday, January the 20th, at home, surrounded by his loving family. The funeral service was held on Saturday, January the 27th at 10 a.m. at St. Barnabas Episcopal Church. Sue B. Curley died January the 21st. The celebration service was held on Saturday, January the 27th at the First Methodist Church in Meridian. Darvin Leslie Poyner passed away on January the 20th. A memorial service to celebrate Darvin's life will be held at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home in Odessa on January the 29th at 1 o'clock. Following the service, Darvin will be laid to rest next to his beloved wife Becky at Rose Hill Ector County Cemetery. Jose Rivera, age 27, passed away on January the 21st. Funeral services were held on Saturday, January the 27th. Teresa Lynn Bradshaw de Rosito, age 60, of Odessa, died Saturday, January the 21st. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements will be by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Rinalda Dominguez, age 71, of Odessa, died Monday, January the 22nd. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on January the 29th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial follows at Rose Hill Garden section of Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Lazaro Rodriguez Larry Lopez, age 49, of Odessa, died Thursday, January the 18th. Chapel service will be held at 1 p.m. January the 29th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at American Heritage. Eula Sue Roberts, age 78, of Odessa, died Friday, January the 19th. No services have been scheduled, but arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Artist Ruth Shelby West, age 74, of Austin, died Sunday, January the 10th, in Harker Heights. A celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. on January the 27th at Bethel St. Paul United Baptist Church in Giddings, Texas. Aline McDonald Shepherd, age 91, of Austin, died Tuesday, January the 16th, in Austin. A celebration of life was held at 1 p.m. on January 27th.
The Odessa City Council came up with a
Bateman
plan Tuesday night on how to spend roughly $8 million in American Rescue Plan Act money by December of 2026.
Odessa Fire Rescue and the Odessa Police Department will receive a significant amount of the funds if the council moves forward with its plan during its February the 13th meeting. The council has opted to spend $1.6 million on a new computer-aided dispatch system, noting the current system goes down frequently. They also plan to purchase new Striker cots and power loads for 8 new ambulances that will arrive in September at a cost of $600,000, hydraulic rescue tools, $315,000, a replacement tender truck, $600,000, and a wildland brush truck, $275,000. The council has set aside $208,000 to upgrade OPD's public restrooms, $113,000 to upgrade the agency's elevators, and $277,000 to demolish the parking lot at 201 North Grant. However, the city is looking into the possibility of finding the money for the elevators and demo elsewhere. Also topping the city's list of purchases are new lights and safety rails at the Durrington Wastewater Treatment Plant, upgrades to the plant's cranes, new fencing, and a grit removal system. The council bemoaned the fact that they weren't able to tackle many of the city's road issues. It set aside $1.6 million for a Dixie Boulevard project that will run from 46th Street to Walnut Avenue. The city has until the end of the year to obligate the ARPA funds and until December the 31st, 2026, to spend it. The council unanimously voted November the 26th to deallocate roughly $6.4 million of the $10.1 million it received in ARP funds, with council members stating that they'd rather spend the money on infrastructure needs rather than on things like COVID testing, vaccinations, lost revenue, personal protective equipment, and other services. In other matters, the council approved three sets of infrastructure and facade grants pitched by the Odessa Development Corporation. Shooter's Coffee, which will open in early March at 801 North Grant Avenue, will receive a $125,000 infrastructure grant and a $25,000 facade grant. Prodigy Imaging will receive a $25,000 facade grant for its property at 406 North Texas. E and L House Builders will receive roughly $133,000 for an infrastructure grant and a $25,000 facade grant. The company is turning the old Jim's Big and Tall store at 432 North Grant Avenue into a restaurant. Local news roundup. Mother-daughter fight lands both in jail. An Odessa mother and daughter were arrested Tuesday afternoon after witnesses said they got into a fight with each other while armed with a candlestick and a kitchen knife. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call around 2:20 p.m. Monday from the 1400 block of Woodlawn Drive.
when officers arrived, Tamika Rochelle Green, 48, told them she and her daughter, Alexis Conti, 23, got into an argument over stolen money, and her daughter punched her and then threatened to kill her with a knife, the report stated. Green admitted she was armed with a candlestick at the time. When officers spoke with Conti, she said her mother is the one who became physically aggressive first, threatening to bash her head in with a candlestick, the report stated. Conti acknowledged she was armed with a knife at the time. Both women were arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Both women remained in the Ector County Jail Tuesday night on $25,000 surety bonds. Police seized 111 grams of cocaine. An Odessa man was arrested Tuesday afternoon after police said they discovered more than 111 grams of cocaine in his vehicle following a traffic stop. According to Odessa Police Department report, an officer pulled Jesse Munzo over after he failed to stop at a proper place at West 59th Street and Golder Avenue and failed to use his turn signal. A drug-detecting canine officer alerted to Munzo's Chevy Suburban, and during a subsequent search, officers found the cocaine under the center console cup holders, the report stated. Munzo was arrested on suspicion of the first-degree felony charge of manufacture/delivery of a controlled substance. He remained in the Ector County Jail Wednesday night on a $50,000 surety bond. Pedestrian killed Wednesday night. A 50-year-old woman was killed Wednesday night while trying to cross East 8th Street outside of a crosswalk. According to the City of Odessa, police were notified of a vehicle pedestrian accident near 8th Street and Moody Avenue around 7:30 p.m. Officers determined Brescia Page was trying to cross the roadway when a 25-year-old man driving a Chevrolet Silverado truck struck her. She was pronounced dead at the scene. The investigation is ongoing. Dear Dr. Roach, I am an 82-year-old woman in good health, and I don't take any medications. My first 5 colonoscopies were 5 years apart from each other because polyps were found each time, all of which ended up testing negative for cancer. My most recent colonoscopy at age 81 was negative for polyps, so I was told that I wouldn't be having any more colonoscopies because of my age and the risk of the procedure. My parents lived to be 90 and 96, as did 3 of my grandparents, so I am hoping for a similar life expectancy. Because of this, I am concerned about stopping colonoscopies now and would appreciate your thoughts. Dear Dr. Roach answers, there isn't a definite answer. Before recommending any procedure, physicians ought to consider the risks and benefits of performing a procedure against the outcome if the procedure isn't done. For preventative health maneuvers like a colonoscopy, it's particularly important to be sure that there is more expected benefit than harm. A colonoscopy has a small risk of harm at the time of the procedure. People can have an adverse effect because of the sedation that is used. More commonly, a small perforation can happen during the colonoscopy, even in the most expert hands. A review of published data of more than 20 years estimates that the perforation rate is about 1 per 3,500 colonoscopies. These risks are small, but not zero. The benefit of a colonoscopy takes time to accrue. Removing a polyp may prevent cancer 7 to 10 years later. Consequently, in average-risk people with a life expectancy of less than 10 years or so, you can expect to cause more harm than benefit. And you can reach Dr. Roach by writing to Dr. Roach, P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida 32853-6475. Dear Abby, I'm irritated by my neighbors, and I don't know quite how to approach it. I live in a densely populated but quiet neighborhood. New neighbors moved in a couple of years ago, and after moving in, they hung a wind chime on their front porch. This isn't your average wind chime. If I had to guess, the chimes are at least 5 feet long. At first, I didn't think much of it. These whimsical little melodies you hear every time the wind blows can be cute, I guess. But it gets quite windy here, and I'm constantly distracted by the loud clanging chimes. I don't want to be the type of person who knocks on their door and tells them how I feel. I was hoping you could chime in. Signed, Disturbed in Rhode Island. Dear Abby responds, Dear Disturbed, make it your business to find out what the noise ordinances are in your neighborhood. Then become the type of neighbor who knocks on the door. When you do, wear a smile and bring along a small gift. Explain that you don't want to appear to be a complainer, but could they please modify those wind chimes? Because on windy days, the constant banging gives you a headache. If they are good neighbors and cooperative, be grateful. However, if they aren't, you may have to pursue legal means. Another Dear Abby. My husband and I have been together for 12 years, but things have changed. We sleep in separate beds, we both work, and we spend little time together, and we can't have a decent conversation. I feel like I have a roommate who just comes and goes as he pleases. He always has an excuse for not spending time with me and our daughter. I don't feel like we are married anymore. What should I do? Signed, Dissatisfied. Dear Dissatisfied, tell your husband you feel like you are living with a roommate rather than a spouse. Tell him you miss the closeness you once shared and ask if he is willing to work on it. What is currently happening isn't fair to you or your daughter. Then make an appointment with the marriage counselor to discuss the state of your marriage. With him, if he's willing, or without him. Another Dear Abby. I recently married, and my 19-year-old son and I moved in with my new husband. My son works full-time and goes to school part-time. My husband expects him to do dishes and other chores. My son does take care of the recycling and trash on a weekly basis. I work from home part-time, and I don't mind doing the chores. This is causing a lot of contention between us. Am I wrong to defend my son? Signed, Willing in Florida. And Dear Abby says, you should not have to defend your son. There are now three adults living under that roof. Your son is not a freeloader. He's working full-time and taking classes. All three of you should be doing the dishes and other chores as needed, and you should all be in agreement about the timing and rotation of who will do what and when. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jeannie Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.